Welcome to the deep dive.
Yeah.
You know that feeling, right? Just drowning in information, prepping for meetings, trying to get up to speed in a new field, or even just keeping up with your own curiosity.
Oh, absolutely. It's relentless, like trying to drink from a fire hose sometimes.
Exactly. And I've personally struggled with, how do you really learn things? How do you make knowledge stick without feeling totally buried? And what we're diving into today, it honestly feels like the kind of shortcut I've always been looking for.
Well, it's definitely a smarter approach.
We're unpacking this really powerful combination, spaced repetition learning with micro learning.
Yeah, it sounds a bit technical, maybe, but the idea is actually pretty intuitive when you break it down.
Right. Think of it as like this intelligent way of learning that pulls together cognitive psychology, how our brains actually work with really smart ways of delivering information.
It's about optimizing when you review stuff and how it's presented. That's the core of it.
So our mission here, for you listening, is to pull out the key insights, the really important bits, maybe some surprising stuff from the sources we've looked at.
And we want to show you how this combination, this method, is actually proven to seriously boost your long-term memory and recall.
Yeah, it offers a smarter way, a much more effective way to get your head around any subject. And crucially, this isn't just about memorizing facts parrot fashion.
No, not at all. It's about building a deeper practical understanding you can actually use.
Okay, let's get into it. Where does this all start? The science behind it.
Right. Well, you got to go back, way back, actually, to the 19th century.
Good.
There was this German psychologist, Hermann Ebbinghaus. He did some groundbreaking work on what he called the forgetting curve.
The forgetting curve. I think I've heard of that. Didn't he do experiments on himself,
Yeah.
memorizing weird things?
Exactly.
Yeah.
He used these lists of nonsensical syllables, stuff like WOB and VYF, things with no meaning.
Huh. Why nonsense syllables?
Well, to test pure memory, without prior knowledge or associations getting in the way, he wanted to see how forgetting worked at its most basic level.
Okay, that makes sense. And what did he find? Besides the fact that memorizing WOB sounds incredibly tedious.
Yeah, it probably was, but what's fascinating, what really stands out from his work, is how we forget.
Okay.
It's not a steady decline. He found that forgetting happens really, really fast right after you learn something, like a steep drop.
Right, I feel that. Learn something one day, gone the next.
But then that initial rapid forgetting starts to slow down over time. The curve flattens out a bit.
Ah.
And this discovery, this curve, it basically laid the foundation for understanding why revisiting information is so critical. You need those reviews at the right moments to fight that initial sharp drop off.
So hitting it again before it fades too much.
Precisely. Strategic intervals, that's the key takeaway Ebbinghaus gave us for long-term retention. Without those timely reviews, yeah, the memory just sort of evaporates.
Incredible. So Ebbinghaus gives us the why, but like, how did we get from his theoretical curve with nonsense syllables to something people could actually use?
Right, good question. It took a while for it to become really practical. Ebbinghaus was foundational, but turning it into a method that came later.
Okay.
You had people thinking along these lines, like C.A. Mace in the UK back in the 1930s, emphasizing, spreading out your study time instead of cramming.
So don't pull an all-nighter, basically.
Pretty much. But the person who really systemized it, who built an algorithm around it, was a Polish researcher, Piotr Wozniak, in the 1980s.
Wozniak, right, with Super Memo.
That's the one. He took Ebbinghaus's principles and Mace's ideas and turned them into a structured computer-based system. That was a huge leap.
Okay, so distributed study, spreading it out,
Okay.
that combats the forgetting curse.
Exactly. It directly fights that natural decay Ebbinghaus showed us. And here's where it gets really interesting. The proof is in the pudding, as they say. Studies comparing spaced repetition to traditional learning, like massed learning or cramming.
Yeah, the classic university panic study method.
Totally. Those studies show participants using spaced repetition hit an average recall accuracy of around 80%.
80%, that's pretty good.
It is, especially when you compare it to the crammers, who only managed about 60% recall.
Wow, that's a big difference. 20 percentage points just from timing your reviews differently.
Exactly. It really highlights why those all-nighters you mentioned often feel so useless afterwards. The information just doesn't stick the same way. It shows the power of working with your brain's natural rhythm.
So, okay, let's dig into how it works then. The core mechanism. You mentioned the spacing effect.
Yeah, that's the fundamental principle.
Yeah.
Basically, you, the learner, will remember information much better for longer if you encounter it multiple times spread out over intervals.
Compared to just hitting it hard once in one big session.
Right. That single intense session might feel productive, but the retention just isn't there long term. Distributed practice is far more effective for building lasting memory.
But okay, this raises a big question for me. How do you know what those intervals should be? Is it always like review after a day, then a week, then a month?
Good point. It's not quite that simple. The optimal intervals, they actually vary.
Vary is based on what?
Mostly based on the complexity of the material and also how well you know it already.
Okay.
So simpler stuff, maybe basic facts or vocabulary, might benefit from shorter initial intervals. But more complex concepts, things that require deeper understanding, they might need longer periods between reviews for your brain to really consolidate them.
So it needs to be adaptable.
Exactly. It's not one size fits all. And that's where these clever algorithms come into play.
Right. The spaced repetition algorithms you mentioned.
Right.
Like Wozniak's Super Memo family.
Yep. That family of algorithms, especially SM2, was really influential. It became the basis for a lot of modern software, probably the most famous being Anki.
Anki, yeah. I know people who swear by that, especially in med school.
Mm-hmm. And the principle behind SM2 and similar algorithms is that they track your performance. When you review an item, you tell the system how well you knew it.
Like easy, good, hard again.
Exactly, those kinds of responses. And based on your feedback, the algorithm calculates the next optimal time for you to see that specific piece of information again.
Ah, so if you find it easy, it pushes the next review further out. If you struggle, it brings it back sooner.
Precisely. The intervals gradually get longer as you demonstrate mastery, making it really efficient. You spend more time on the stuff you don't know well.
That's smart. How does that compare to, say, older methods? You mentioned one earlier, Leitner.
Yeah, the Leitner system from the 70s. It was clever for its time, a physical system using flashcards and boxes.
Boxes, how'd that work?
Basically, you had several boxes. Cards you got right moved up to the next box, which you reviewed less frequently. Cards you got wrong moved back down to the first box for more frequent review.
Okay, so a physical version of increasing intervals.
Right. It was effective, definitely better than just flipping through a single stack. But, you know, compared to modern algorithms that track individual card difficulty and your specific recall history, it's considered a bit outdated, less precise, less customizable.
Makes sense. And are there even newer algorithms now beyond SM2?
Oh, definitely. Research is always ongoing. For example, Duolingo, the language app, developed something called half-life regression, or HLR.
Half-life regression. Sounds complex.
It is, under the hood. But it's a really good example of a more recent, highly data-driven approach. They use massive amounts of user data to predict the half-life of a memory. Like when you're about 50% likely to forget something and they schedule the review just before that point.
Wow. So it's dynamically adjusting based on millions of learners' data.
Exactly. Very sophisticated, constantly optimizing those intervals based on real-world forgetting patterns.
Okay, this is fascinating science, but let's bring it down to earth. What does this mean for someone listening? How can you actually use this stuff day-to-day?
Right, the practical application. Well, the most direct way is using spaced repetition systems, or SRS software.
Like Anki, which we mentioned.
Yep, Anki is a big one. Hugely popular, especially for serious memorization tasks like medicine or law or language learning, because it's so incredibly customizable. You can tweak the algorithms, design complex cards, total control.
Oh, there's always a but.
Huh, yeah. The but with Anki is that, frankly, the interface looks pretty dated, and it has a really steep learning curve. It can be intimidating for new users.
Okay, so powerful, but maybe not the friendliest. What else? Quizlet.
Quizlet is another popular one. Much simpler user experience, very easy to get started, lots of pre-made flashcard sets available.
That sounds good.
It is, for ease of use. But the downside is Quizlet's core modes don't really have true built-in spaced repetition algorithms like Anki. They have a learn mode that adapts a bit, but it's not the same sophisticated scheduling. And relying on pre-made decks might not be optimal for your specific learning needs.
Gotcha. So dedicated SRS tools are one route. What about this micro-learning angle?
Right, the other piece of the puzzle. Microlearning platforms are really taking off, especially in the corporate world, for training.
Why microlearning specifically?
Because it delivers learning in short, focused bursts. Think small, digestible modules that people can actually fit into busy schedules. It supports that idea of continuous learning, chipping away at something rather than needing a huge block of time.
Okay, bite-sized learning. What are the key features of these platforms?
Good ones usually focus on a single learning objective per module, keeps it really targeted. They use multimedia like videos or short interactives to keep things engaging.
Makes sense. Keep it varied.
Definitely. Interactive content is key too, getting the learner to actually do something, not just passively consume.
Mm-hmm.
And crucially, they track your progress and give you feedback.
So you know how you're doing.
Exactly. That feedback loop is vital.
Can you give a specific example? Where does this combo really shine?
Technology and software training is a great one. Think about learning a complex new piece of enterprise software.
Yeah. Usually involves a thick manual or a long, boring webinar.
Right. But imagine instead you get short, micro-learning modules, maybe even delivered inside the software itself, right when you need help with a specific task.
Like little pop-up guides.
Exactly. Contextual, in-app guidance companies like WhatFix provide this kind of thing. You get focused, step-by-step tutorials just in time.
That sounds much better.
It is. And when you combine that micro-delivery with spaced repetition principles, maybe the system reminds you later to practice that task you learned. It really cements the knowledge.
Yeah.
It boosts retention and helps people actually adopt and use the software effectively.
Leads to better productivity, I guess.
Definitely. And this is where AI, artificial intelligence, is making things even more powerful.
How so?
AI can take personalization to a whole new level. It can analyze your individual learning path, figure out what you know and what you're struggling with, and adapt the content and the spacing just for you.
Wow. Truly bespoke learning.
Pretty much. It can tailor the structure, suggest different resources, even provide more interactive feedback based on your specific mistakes. It helps create a much more impactful experience that translates better to real-world skills.
Okay, so the potential here seems huge. Let's talk about the upside. Why should someone listening really care about adopting this? What are the big wins?
Well, the most obvious one, and the one Ebbinghaus started us on, is simply improved memory retention.
Right, remembering more stuff.
Exactly. Research consistently shows that spacing out your learning significantly boosts how much you remember compared to cramming. We mentioned that 80% is a 60% figure earlier. Some studies show like an average 15% improvement in verbal recall just by using spaced repetition.
15% just by changing the timing. That's significant.
It really is. You're leveraging how your brain is actually designed to learn and form long-term memories. It's working smarter, not necessarily harder.
Okay, better memory. What else?
Enhanced learning engagement is another big one, especially with the micro-learning aspect.
Keeping people interested.
Yes. Breaking down complex subjects into small, manageable chunks just makes it less daunting and easier to stay focused. People are more likely to start and finish a 5-minute module than a 1-hour lecture.
True.
And the data backs this up. Microlearning can apparently create up to 50% more engagement compared to traditional long-form training.
50% more engagement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when it's adaptive microlearning, tailoring content to your specific gaps, it feels even more relevant and motivating. You're not wasting time on stuff you already know.
That connects to those training evaluation models, right?
Ain't that good?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It directly hits the first two levels. Reaction, do learners like it and find it relevant? And learning, do they actually acquire the intended knowledge and skills? Higher engagement usually leads to better outcomes on both fronts.
Makes sense. So better memory, more engagement. Anything else?
Yeah, something really crucial. Transferable knowledge.
What do you mean by transferable? I mean knowledge that you can actually apply in new situations, not just regurgitate facts. When you encounter information multiple times, spaced out, you process it more deeply.
You sort of turn it over in your mind more.
Precisely. You make more connections. This leads to a much deeper understanding, allowing you to take that knowledge and use it effectively in different real-world scenarios, like on the job.
So it moves beyond rote learning to actual practical skill.
Exactly. Which ultimately leads to better job performance, solving problems more effectively, things like that. That's the real goal, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And one more thing related to engagement. The power of motivation and gamification.
Points and badges.
Yeah, sometimes. But it can be more sophisticated. Things like progress bars, leaderboards, unlocking levels, getting rewards for achieving milestones. These elements can tap into both intrinsic motivation, the satisfaction of learning, and extrinsic motivation, the rewards.
Makes it more fun, less like a chore.
Totally. It creates a more dynamic, enjoyable environment, which keeps people coming back and makes the whole process more effective.
Okay, it sounds pretty amazing. Better memory, more engagement, real application, even fun.
Mm-hmm.
But it can't be all sunshine and roses, right? what are the challenges? Where can this go wrong?
No, you're right. Implementation definitely has its pitfalls. One big risk, ironically, is overwhelming learners.
Wait, with microlearning, isn't it supposed to prevent that?
It is, but only if it's done well. If the modules aren't truly focused on a single objective, or if they aren't broken down into small enough manageable units, you can still end up swamping people with too much information, just in smaller packets.
Ah, so the design of the micro content is critical.
Absolutely critical. It needs careful thought and instructional design.
Okay, what else?
Well, technological barriers are a real thing. The platform you use matters.
It's clunky or hard to use.
Yeah, exactly. If the SRS software or the microlearning platform isn't user-friendly, if it's buggy, if people can't easily figure out how to use it, they'll just give up.
Frustration kills motivation fast.
Instantly. So choosing an intuitive platform is key, and providing good technical support. Also, thinking about access, is it mobile friendly? Many people want to do quick reviews or modules on their phones. If they can't, that's a barrier.
Good point. Mobile accessibility is huge now. Okay, so overwhelming content, tech issues.
Maintaining engagement long term is another challenge. The novelty might wear off.
Right. How do you keep it fresh?
That's where integrating truly interactive elements becomes vital. Not just multiple choice quizzes, but maybe simulations, scenario-based activities where you make decisions, maybe even well-designed educational games.
Making it actively involving, not just passive clicking.
Exactly. Variety and meaningful interaction are key to keeping people engaged over time.
And anything else? A final big challenge.
I think a really crucial one, especially in organizational settings, is aligning with organizational goals.
Meaning the training needs to actually be relevant to the business.
Yeah, precisely. Sometimes training gets developed in a vacuum. If learners don't see how the microlearning modules or the stuff they're memorizing with SRS actually helps them do their job better or contributes to what the company cares about, they won't buy in.
They'll see it as just another task to check off.
Right. So involving stakeholders, managers, experienced employees, and planning the learning is vital. Ensuring it addresses real challenges and supports business objectives fosters that buy-in, which leads to better retention and, more importantly, better application of the knowledge.
That makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the person using this for, like, personal learning, learning a language or a hobby? They don't have organizational goals. How do they stay motivated or avoid pitfalls?
That's a great point. The principles are the same, but the context shifts. For personal learning, the alignment is with your own goals. Why do you want to learn this language? What do you want to do with this hobby? Keeping that why clear is your motivation.
So connecting it back to your personal passion.
Exactly. And the challenges of overwhelming content or maintaining engagement are still there. You need to be disciplined about breaking things down yourself, finding or creating good materials, maybe using gamified apps or joining a community of learners to stay motivated. The onus is more on the individual.
Right. Okay, let's make this even more concrete. Can we look at some real-world examples? Where has this combination really succeeded?
Absolutely. There's good evidence out there. In education, for instance, research has shown clear benefit.
Like in schools or universities?
Yeah. Studies, like one by Kang back in 2016, looked at subjects like math and language learning. They found that using bite-sized modules combined with spaced repetition for review significantly boosted both how efficiently students learn and how much they retained long-term compared to traditional methods.
So proof it works in the classroom.
Definitely. And then in the corporate world, there are case studies, too. I read about one from a company called Big Town. Their training team revamped programs for manufacturing and customer service staff. They moved away from long workshops to short, focused modules that employees could access on mobile devices.
Ah, micro-learning in action.
Exactly. And they encouraged spaced review. The result was a big jump in employee engagement with the training and much better retention of the key procedures and information. People could learn when it suited them, fitting it into their workflow.
That sounds like a win. Any examples of, like, specific skills being learned this way?
Yeah, there was an interesting one with novice bank tellers. Their training was structured progressively.
How so?
First, they used spaced repetition, likely with flashcards or an app, to really nail down key financial vocabulary and definitions, just internalizing the basics.
Building the foundation.
Right. Then, once they had that foundation solid, the training moved on to applying that knowledge in realistic customer scenarios, likely through micro simulations or role-playing exercises.
Okay, learn the terms, then use them.
Exactly. And that combination, foundational knowledge via spaced repetition, then application via interactive microlearning, led to much better performance in their assessments and, more importantly, gave them more confidence when dealing with actual customers.
I can see how that would work.
Yeah.
Building confidence step by step.
Mm-hmm. And one more interesting angle comes from research on mixed practice, sometimes called interleaving.
Mixed practice, what's that?
It means mixing up different but related types of problems or concepts during your practice sessions, rather than just doing blocks of the same thing over and over, which is called blocked practice.
Okay, so instead of doing 20 addition problems, then 20 subtraction, you mix them up.
Exactly. And a study by Rohrer in 2014 found that when students use this mixed practice approach, combined with spaced repetition intervals, they significantly outperformed students who used blocked practice. Even though blocked practice often feels easier in the moment, the mixed practice group showed much better long-term retention and ability to apply their knowledge.
Wow. So mixing things up, even though it feels harder, leads to better learning.
It seems so. It forces your brain to work harder to retrieve the right strategy or information for each problem rather than just going on autopilot. And combining that with spacing, that's a really powerful formula for deep, durable learning.
Fascinating. Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here.
We have. From Ebbinghaus's curve to AI-powered adaptive learning.
So wrapping this up, the core message seems pretty clear.
Mm-hmm.
This integration of spaced repetition and micro-learning. It's not just some trendy buzzword.
No, definitely not. It's a genuinely transformative approach, deeply rooted in cognitive science.
The approach that really promises deeper understanding and knowledge that actually sticks around.
Yeah, it's about learning smarter, leveraging how our brains work, rather than just trying to brute force information in.
So for you listening, armed with this knowledge now, hopefully you feel better equipped to tackle new information, whether that's prepping for a big presentation, getting your head around a new industry, or even just, you know, satisfying your own curiosity about something.
It gives you a practical toolkit to make that learning more effective and honestly, probably less stressful.
Definitely. Now, here's something for you to think about after we finish. What area of knowledge, maybe something you feel kind of overwhelmed by right now, could you transform into something you deeply understand, something you can actually use by consciously applying these principles?
Good question.
Think about it. How could you maybe break it down? How could you build in small, consistent reviews into your day, maybe even outside of any formal course, just weaving it into your routine to really solidify what you learn?
Yeah, even just tiny steps consistently applied. That seems to be the secret sauce.